Is it a dumb game, or am I just dumb?
What's dropping?
If you are looking for relevant gaming coverage from experts, you are not getting it on this show.
So as you're aware, I did a lot of traveling the last few days for the holiday, and I thought it would be... You knew that part about my life, but there's one part about my life I didn't tell you about, which was I was engaged in Mortal Kombat with a man on the airplane, and I felt like maybe now is the time to talk about that engagement. We were just sitting there, everything's going fine. I'm looking straight ahead into the middle distance, no eye contact, no need for me to talk to anybody. I want to give
up. What kind of seat situation were you in?
It's just two seats. There's no middle seat, so it's me and this guy. This dude, probably an hour, no, not even an hour, probably 45 minutes into the flight, decides that he's going to start farting. And I know right now you're asking, like, how do I know that it was this man who was doing the farting? And it's because he was an Asian man, and his farts had an Asian tinge to him.
So you're stereotyping farts.
Well, listen, when I can smell ginger and soy coming out of somebody's behind, I know exactly where it's coming from.
Because no one...
I can trace
no
it.
Other people than Asian people consume Asian cuisine.
I traced it to its source. And what I realized...
You racially profiled his bodily excretions.
I traced it to its source using my proboscis, and...
Your honor!
So, I felt like it was my duty, because no one else... And I emphasis on the duty. I felt like no one else was going to bring this up.
Oh my God.
And the only way to bring it up, though, was to launch a salvo of my own farts.
To fire back. So, Pearl Harbor had been attacked.
That's right. I launched American farts at his Asian farts. Mine smelled like meat and, you know, maybe some corn.
Freedom.
Yeah. A few Doritos.
Whiteness.
Yeah. So we engaged in this about 45-minute long fart battle. No one was safe. We mustard gassed the entire tube that we were traveling.
It was a good metaphor for war itself.
It was.
Because there was so much collateral damage. And when it was all over, no one really had felt like they won. Everyone lost.
Everyone's eyes were burning. On the way out, they gave everyone sort of a wet nap to put over their eyes to try to, you know, get rid of the tears and the stinging. But, you know, what I realized that day was that the best way to get rid of any cramps when you're on a plane is to wait for somebody else to have the balls to start farting themselves, and then you just sneak in behind them and start farting on your own. Because there was no war going on. In fact, I'm grateful for that man, because he started farting, and then I was like, holy shit, I can just sneak some of these right out of my ass now. And no one else is going to know, because they're going to think it's him. They're going to think, I mean, it would have a different mix of flavor, of course, to it. But
so you're assuming that everyone else was racially profiling the farts.
Oh, they knew. They knew what he was doing.
I wish as you exited the plane, you saw the whitest dude ever. And he just like winked at you and raised like a Chinese takeout container.
With this sort of sly Van Damme-esque grin, you know.
And then over the airplane loudspeakers.
It's misery when you travel and you have colon issues, because holy shit, man. On the return flight, I made the mistake of eating Mexican the night before. And it was great Mexican food, and it's kind of a tradition to go out and have Mexican and some margaritas and whatnot, but all flight, what ends up happening, it feels like the farts are at the gate, they're ready to come out, and then I hold them in, and then it goes deeper inside me than where it originally was, and it just stacks. Like, oxygen, like whatever the stuff is in there.
It's like you're playing Tetris in your gastrointestinal
system. And eventually, like in one of these days, it's going to get to the point where I'm going to lose the game and it's going to come out my mouth. I'm going to start burping farts. I'm so scared of that actually happening. I don't know if anyone out there has an anatomy book or knows the physiology of humans, whether or not it's possible to fart out of your mouth after holding in farts for so long. And then, I don't know people who do these international flights. Fuck, man. If I was going to, like, Tokyo or Singapore or something like that, and I'm on a 15 to 20-hour flight, what do you do during that time? I would be crop dusting as I walked up and down the aisles. I'd just be layering farts on people.
For me, it's also, as someone who can't sleep on flights, I feel like I'm in the rarity. And everyone else, with those long flights, they miss a good 8 hours of it.
Yeah.
So for them, it's for someone who can't sleep on a flight, that is like an immense amount of time to just be confined in a small space, staring off into the distance or reading or whatever. It's fucked up.
I think the only way I would be able to combat it would be to either get totally wasted or sedate myself.
And that
myself.
Burns about 4 hours.
Yeah, and then you got to deal with if there's any hangover or nausea and all that other shit. I mean, it's a whole to-do, this thing with flying. And
I would be happy if we could just approve the use of, like, anesthesia.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be Michael Jackson to Australia.
Yeah, how amazing would that be,
I want to be laid out in a bed and an IV stuck in my arm and just done. Like, I will risk death for that.
I would do the exact same thing. I don't have it in me to travel. Is fun, I enjoy it, but if there's any way I can cut corners, and if it means risking certain death, I would do it as well. There's no good reason to sit there and just look at people. And then you got to mingle with people. I don't want to mingle with anybody. I don't want to become friends with people. A guy tried it. At the last 5 minutes of the flight, he's asking me where I'm from. And the window of opportunity was closed 5 minutes into the flight.
Yeah, there's these people who get all... I'm such a miserable person that I get angry at the sense of joy that overtakes a plane when you get into the final descent,
mm-hmm.
and everyone suddenly gets chatty.
Yeah.
You know, I fucking hate that. Like, don't get excited about anything in life. It's not worth it.
That's the lesson I think all of our listeners should take away. And I believe we have wasted all of 8 minutes talking about travel. This is not a travel podcast. Although, for those of you who happen to tune into the superdumbgames.twitch.tv//superdumbgames, whoever tuned in for that, you went on an adventure. So before we go into that, ladies and gentlemen, I do believe this is episode 12 of the Super Dumb Games podcast. I'm
a baker's dozen.
No, a baker's dozen's 13.
I'll use that next week. This is a regular dozen.
That's right. We didn't ask the baker to make any. He didn't have to stretch anything. He just throw the 12 in there. I'm getting the fuck out. So I'm one of your hosts, Chris.
I'm your other host, Tanner.
And Tanner, you had some thrilling adventures in the Far Cry 3 universe. And it seemed as though one of the nights you got a little drunk while playing, and were just loving every minute of it. Now, I only caught here and there, but could you please tell us about your adventures on that tropical island where you were kept as a prisoner and had to escape?
Yeah, so we had the annual Super Dumb Games Black Friday Thanksgiving live stream spectacular. It's a long-running fan favorite. I think this is the sixth year we've done it.
Yeah, people have been, they trade the tapes on the underground.
And there was at one point in time, 5 people in the chat.
Holy shit.
I couldn't believe it. We exceeded all expectations.
I can't even imagine the crowd control you had to be doing.
It was out of hand. I mean, I was contacted by Twitch management. They said, whoa. Let's chill out in that chat. It's getting a little... Our bandwidth is cresting. We need to do something about this. So eventually people did leave. And I think it was me, friend of the show Shane, and friend of the show Adam, essentially. And I consumed a bottle of wine and scotch and devolved over the hours that I was playing, particularly on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I couldn't even pronounce words at the end of it. But I had a blast. I woke up the next morning. My throat was sore from screaming throughout the... But that game's a perfect live stream game because it's an open world. There's some kind of mission structure. I couldn't understand anything that was happening. I was a guy, I was on vacation, and then jump cut, I'm collecting boar hides and crafting rucksacks.
I think actually
about as much as I could piece together.
I think one of the more confusing parts for me was just even the intro, because all of a sudden you kids are like, it's the game starts out super dumb. You guys are like just hanging out, doing what white people do. So, you know, let's go surfing, let's skydive, let's go to the tiki bar, and you know, whatever. And it's just all this woo and that kind of shit all for all of like 5 minutes. And then next thing you know, you wake up in a bamboo cell, and then your buddy wants to escape. I don't know if it was ever explained, but somehow your friend knows how to murder people. So
he can throw knives into people's necks.
I mean,
and I guess they say he was in the army. I don't know that the army trains you to throw the Renaissance fair does, but not the army.
And so this motherfucker's trying to guide you out of camp, and then he dies, and then all of a sudden you're just going to pick up the mantle. Like, how does he reconcile what is happening in front of him?
Okay. I mean, throughout the game, he's always kind of like, oh my God, what's going on? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, but then 2 hours in, you're just laying waste to people. And you're supposed to have this emotional connection with the other characters who you're saving, who are all ultra hot chicks. It feels really like they could have. If they would have went really campy and made it kind of a cabin in the woods sort of thing, mm-hmm. I think it could have been super cool. But it doesn't. It seems like the dumbness of this is wholly unintentional. You know, I think they were trying to make almost an emotionally impactful story, and then it just happened to get really dumb at times. But it would have been cool to see them do a satire in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's overall, I think I've been having fun with it, but it's because it does engender some super dumb moments. You know, you have this open world, and one of the wonderful things they did about this, because I've played the other two Far Cries, one of the different things about this game is there's wild animals that are just pissed everywhere.
I saw you get killed by an iguana or something like that.
You're constantly under assault by the animal kingdom, which is hilarious because you'll be trying to do something or kill another dude, and then all of a sudden you hear a hiss and there's a monitor lizard, you know, gripped onto your ankle. And there's vehicles that drive insanely, you know, and of course I never took any roads. That's just my thing.
Sure.
And it, you know, explosions happen, there's crazy guns, but the checkpoint system is just fucked. So I've had multiple instances where I've had to replay things over again because the checkpoints just aren't jiving correctly. And even to the point where at one point in the game, I was checkpointed like a mission down the line. And then I saved it. Went to play again, was at that point, fucked up, got lost, did something else, quit, reloaded, and I was a mission previous.
What the
I've fuck? Never had this happen in a game never. Where I was checkpointed at, say, mission 2.4,
mm-hmm.
and it legitimately saved, and I returned to that mission, went off, did a side quest, came back, and then reloaded, and I was at 2.3.
The fuck?
It was so frustrating. I can't even describe how frustrating that is to have finished something and then have to replay it again, even after it had been saved.
I would have thrown my controller down. There's no way I would even go back to it. I would be so pissed.
So there's a lot of weird stuff going on there with the checkpoint system, but the dumb moments are enough that it keeps me coming back, and I've continued to play it, even though I've got like Bioshock Infinite and GTA 5 sitting on my shelf now. So that's something.
Yeah.
And I would encourage people to check out, you know, just dive in, go to the Twitch stream and all the videos are archived, and just jump around in there and witness some of the hilarity that occurred, because I think it was a fun stream overall, and I had a good time, and I'm hoping to do more streaming overall, maybe even weekly if I can manage it.
Yeah. I would like to incorporate the stream more. Obviously, I think it's a good way to get clued in with what the fans are up to, all five of you. And then it's a good way to just show people how bad we are at playing games. I think that's the thing I'm most scared of, is that people are going to see just how terrible of a gamer I am.
Yeah, it's, and especially, I think there was one segment in there where I had to assault a ship, and it just, like, and you've got everyone in chat telling you what to do. You know, everyone in chat's a fucking expert. Just nothing was going as according to plan. But it would not be a good stream if everything went perfectly. That's what YouTube gets wrong. All these walkthroughs and let's plays that are like, you know, people who are expert players just plowing through a game in a way no one else but them can do. That's so boring. I like to see shit get fucked up.
Yeah.
That's what the best part of streaming.
And seeing the frustration. That's so much fucking fun. Well, this week I didn't play shit, so I think we got news up next, unless you got shit you want to say.
No. Nope.
Done.
Idaho Gun Jockeys, this one's for you. What's dropping? November 27th, 2013, my dad's birthday. I didn't even call him. I'm just realizing that now. He's used to it.
Send him this podcast.
But you know what? I'm sure it was a good birthday, because Professional Farmer 2014... dropped. Developed by Playway SA, publisher United Independent Entertainment. This one's only for PC. All y'all who bought the collector's edition, you're in for a treat, because the collector's edition features the historical farming agricultural simulator. The game takes you to the good old days, and you will experience the charming farming of the 60s and 70s.
I have no idea that those decades were known for their farming. At what point in time did anyone look back at the 60s and 70s and go, that was a time for the farmer. That was the age of the farmer.
Yeah, there was amazing music, social upheaval, transformative things happening. But if you were on the farm...
The most famous farmer of that era would be the guy who lent out his land to Woodstock. Every other farmer faded into obscurity.
But I guess for a certain subsector of the population like that, it's like there's probably like a muscle car equivalent for farmers, you know?
Yeah.
Like instead of driving like a 67 Stang, there's a particular John Deere tractor that's just sick.
Yeah.
So continuing in this version, farm management, cultivating fields, planting crops, animal husbandry.
Holy shit.
And buying and selling produce are just a few of the major game elements this simulation offers. Does that whet your palate? What is animal husbandry? That sounds bestial.
It's when you breed animals, basically.
God, that sounds exciting.
Yeah. I have a confession to make. I own Farming Simulator 2013.
That sounds like a game that might need to get streamed.
It's the dumbest game. I played it with our friend Casey. Games like these are so in-depth. They run deep. Like, it's deep cuts about how farmers... If you don't know anything about farming, you're not going to get much out of the experience. But the people who play the game become hardcore, and some of them in real life are farmers. They finish up their farming day, and they come inside to farm on a simulator. They just did the real thing for 16 hours. And
I know, that's hard for me to understand.
When you ask these people, why are you doing this then? They say it's relaxing. They just sort of, you know, it relaxes them. It kind of gets their brain decompressed from the hard day's work. And they will till the land and then lay down some crops. And I mean, it's just crazy. Now, I don't know if there's any, like, distinguishing differences between Farm Simulator 2013 and this game that you're talking about. You know, if one's, you know, is one the NBA 2K14 versus the what's the other, the EA Sports or the other, you know, there's always
NBA Live.
Yeah, NBA Live. Like, is there much of a difference? Are there fans of each one and they're at each other's throats?
So what they're really advertising is like the killer. And this is one of the things I love about these games is their killer features they try to sell you on. Their number one bullet point is, for the first time ever in a farming simulator, different seasons. Which, to me, if I'm planning a farming simulator, all right, number one, we need farmland. Mm-hmm. Number two, we need farming implements. Number three, seasons!
But think of it like this, though, that... Who's going to be playing in the winter time? The farmers don't do shit in the winter.
That's when you hole up with your family and work through your, you know, whatever stored up, and you try to survive.
So maybe Farming Simulator should come with an Oculus Rift, and you bang your homely wife during that off season and try to make children to then help you till the land later on in later seasons.
And then you just stare at your existing children as they slowly fade and get emaciated as your crop, because you sucked at the game earlier, and you just watch your children die before your eyes.
The best part about these games, though, is that the amount of dicking around that goes on is phenomenal, and it's funny. Because Casey and I would go into that game, and you'd have people who are trying to do a proper job of making the crops work and trying to deliver crops to town and things like that. And meanwhile, he and I would just spawn somewhere and then lower that rake thing behind us to till the soil and just mess up all of the grass in the game. Like, everything became farmland as far as we were concerned. Nothing was out of bounds. And then we would make pileups in town. We would try to make roadblocks out of the equipment so that the guys trying to get into town, they couldn't deliver their crops because we had set up a roadblock of an irrigation system is just right in the middle of the main street downtown, and you can't get through unless you ram it. Just shit like that. And it makes the game fun when you do that. Otherwise, it's bullshit.
So next up, we've got our top sizzlers. The top stories from this past week. First up, Ashes Cricket 2013 canceled, here's the kicker, after release.
What?
I've never heard of this before. This game came out and got retroactively canceled. It debuted. People own it, but you can no longer own it. It's like they They tried to do, like, game release time travel or something. They, like, wiping its existence.
Holy shit. Is it because the game's a mess? It's just not playable? Or is it just they don't want to support it somehow?
The story on Gamasutra reads that developed by a Melbourne company, Trickstar Games, was released and quickly received a long string of poor reviews from critics and users alike. So the game was pulled from Steam. And publisher 505 Games has now confirmed that the game will not be developed any further and has instead been pulled indefinitely.
Oh my God.
They released the game. It was a shit show. And they said, fuck it. Like this. What's really incredible to me about this is they could have just let it go, you know?
Yeah.
They could have just released a crappy game. But like, I guess they felt shame or didn't want it to reflect poorly maybe on the company and you know, build ill will. I don't know. But yeah, it no longer exists.
Wow. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me. If it doesn't require follow-on support, just let it go out there. And if it sucks, whatever. You're going to find people. That's the other thing, too. When a game is really terrible, we do dumb games, but there are terrible games, just horrifically bad games that aren't even fun or funny, or they're not even dumb. They're just they're shit. But there is, we find charm in the dumb stuff. But every so often, I want to play the worst game that's ever been made. I want to see what it's like. So leave it out there.
Let it wash over us and let us hate it. Like, I can't imagine this happening in movies or something where a movie gets released and it's so awful. Although, well, that happened to Garbage Pail Kids. So it got released and then immediately pulled out of theaters. But it's still, you can still purchase it.
I don't know. This is interesting.
All right, next story. This one is certainly to stir your passions, Chris.
Uh-oh.
Shenmue 3 trademark filed.
Woo!
But exposed as a hoax.
For a second, I got all excited.
Yeah, so the thing I love about this story is apparently there's some troll out there.
A master.
Who's taking beloved properties of games and is filing trademarks just to, like, get dumb games press. All, you know, and fans all in a tizzy.
Oh, that's great.
So he or she most recently did this for Shenmue 3. And Sega had to come out and say, no, we have no knowledge of this. This is not something that's real. But previously, the same person, it's suspected, filed trademarks for Fallout 4 and Half-Life 3.
This guy knows exactly what buttons to push with nerds. Oh, that's so awesome.
And I think every time people have reported on it, you know, they follow, you know, people look for when domains are registered and all
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's so great.
But I guess, so Sega has not confirmed any, apparently Shenmue is not, there's no follow-up in production at all. And the guy who created it, Yu Suzuki, is not working on it. So it doesn't look like anytime soon it'll happen.
Honestly, I only ever played Shenmue, the first one. I never played the second one, which I think came out for the Xbox or something. I can't remember. I don't know if that was on, because one was
yeah,
on.
I didn't play the second one either.
But the first one, you know, when it ended, it was supposed to be the beginning of, like, a chapter or a whole series of games, I thought.
Yeah, like a soap opera.
Right. I still have very vivid memories of racing a forklift and around.
It's like all anyone remembers, which is not a good thing.
Well, I remember all the QuickTime events. I remember QuickTime events. I remember running through the town. Playing an arcade game. And then
eating a cat milk.
Yeah, and then at the very end of the game, I think a boat. I don't know, a boat sails off into the sunset. I think that's
some huge highlights. Beating a cat milk, driving a forklift, and playing a game within a game. That, ladies and gentlemen, is expert game design. When those are the big highlights.
Oh, man.
I still have a fond feeling towards Shenmue, though.
I do, too. I mean, I would sit there and listen to lateral lists on nonstop play on my computer and play Shenmue. It was
one of those games You know, there are a few games in gaming history that have so much hype pre-release that they are certain to be disasters because the collective imaginary of video game fans far outstrips what is ever achievable with the game. And I think that was one of those games that people saw a lot of coverage, you know, back in magazines and all that. And we all collectively imagined this huge, immersive, open world experience that we're still not even at yet.
We haven't touched it, honestly.
No. Next story, Games Radar created a list of the 15 rarest and most valuable Wii games.
Oh, I don't have me guess any. I don't know any Wii games.
No, I mean, yeah, there's no chance. I just found this list really interesting that there is a market for Wii collectors. And I was looking through this list and I stumbled on one of the dumbest games I've ever heard of.
Okay.
So this game is on this 15 rarest list. It's called Walk It Out.
Do you just walk? Is that it? Is it?
That pretty much is the pitch.
Oh my god.
I mean, if you're gonna pitch this game, basically you get on your Wii balance board, a Super Dumb Games all-time greatest peripheral, and you walk in place on your balance board. And guess what, everyone? In game, you walk.
I love that this was pitched and greenlit, that somebody said, this is a brilliant idea. Can we make the avatars hold hands? That might be too much, but we can make them walk. That's for sure. We have the technology.
And now it's a collector's item. This motherfucker is $100 mint.
Holy shit!
$52 used.
That's worth more than my Wade Boggs rookie card.
Here's the synopsis, and this came out in 2010. Designed with children and parents in mind, Walk It Out takes a fresh perspective on gaming by integrating traditional rhythm elements with a low-impact and high-energy walking simulator. In addition to addictive and rewarding gameplay, Walk It Out provides an immersive music experience by offering one of the vastest and expansive music libraries of any rhythm game on the market. The soundtrack, which contains over 100 songs, features some of today's biggest artists, including licensed masters from Ne-Yo, Fergie, and Demi Lovato. Walk It Out's uniqueness lies in the gameplay, where players walk their way throughout an expansive world of fields, stadiums, parks, oceanside, suburbs, and other metropolitan areas. Guess what? You could do that outside!
Yeah.
As players step to the beat, they will begin to watch the world evolve and expand in real time. Go straight or take a turn. follow the road less traveled to unlock in-game items, songs, and bonuses. The more you walk, the more you discover and explore. More than just gameplay, Walk It Out promotes and encourages fitness, walking, and wellness for the whole family. As players walk, progress is tracked with in-game charts, graphs, and visuals to show calories burned. None! Scan at best! Distance traveled, steps taken, and more. Because of the easy-to-learn controls, players of all skill levels can get up and walking quickly. Yeah, everyone can walk except if you're a cripple. Players can even take a break from their travels with fun and challenging mini-games. Sounds amazing.
This is a game designed specifically for lazy mall walkers. Those mall walkers who don't want to get up in the morning and drive to the mall to do the walking, so they're like,
yeah, that sounds exhausting.
Yeah, I'm just gonna walk it out today. It's ridiculous.
Final segment, fan favorite, hot off the wire. Your top stories from the PR Newswire. Huge, huge story.
Huge.
Headline reads, Big Fish, which is a game company, survey finds almost half of casual gamers have visited a fortune teller. This segment, all I have to do is read headlines.
Oh my god, it's so dumb. What is the correlation between... Why is this being conducted?
One of the reasons why this is my personal favorite segment is because it allows us to unpack the ways in which PR people try to concoct news press releases, try to concoct something that's worthy of a press release. So, Susan Lusty... which is an amazing porn name, from Big Fish Games. Her big challenge was they've got this shit-ass hidden object game coming out called Fates Carnival, where you just, you know, you go around. It's for mongoloids, where you just go, you look at a screensaver and you pick out things.
It's for geezers.
It's a digital version of a highlights magazine for geezers.
Yeah.
So they've got this shit game coming out, and they're like, all right, no one cares. We don't even care. How do we get press coverage? So what they do is they call up like 5 people, and they ask them, do you play a casual game? Yes. Have you ever been to a fortune teller? Yes. Bam. Like, they're conducting a survey.
The
game's about a fortune teller.
Okay, it's still stupid. I just don't care. I don't know if they understand what I care about. I only want them to do things that I care about, and this is not one of them.
I don't, like, can you imagine the person for whom they care about the correlation between people who play casual games and fortune teller visiting?
I just don't know what it gleans about the person, outside of that they're a dumbass for having gone to a fortune teller, but...
It's bizarre. And then they don't even explain the methodology of the study. So they don't tell you how many people were surveyed. They could have just, like, this Susan Lusty could have been at her computer typing up this piece of shit and just shouted over a cubicle, anyone play casual games? And like, yeah, you go to fortune tellers? No. And then she considers that a survey and then writes this up and publishes it. So she, like, essentially concocts this survey with no scientific backing or whatever, just to be able to write a press release. It's mind-boggling, and the PR newswire is full of this crap.
I hate it. I how do we change this? What can we do to get this to never be a part of our lives again? I'm sick of it.
It's spun out of control. Press has got it's, and especially with the games press, I think it's
depressing.
That's your news. Welcome to the wild card segment. Before we get into some more, well, the conclusion of Tito Mosquito's Gex fan fiction, I wanted to introduce a new piece of content we're going to be releasing under Super Dumb Games. It's called Forgive or Forget. And the premise basically is both Chris and I have games that other people absolutely love, that we either haven't played and or just hate for no good reason. And we want to confront these games and evaluate them completely objectively, give them a shot, and determine, render a judgment on whether we are going to forgive them or forget them entirely. So we're both going to be scheduling live streams of us playing these games that we've selected, which you can tune into. And then we're going to get together and discuss those games on a Google Hangout and record that and release it up on YouTube. It'll be something that kind of exists outside of the podcast, an extra piece of content that you can enjoy beyond the podcast that you can watch live. We're going to start with 2 games. So, Chris, you want to talk about the game you're going to start with?
Yeah, I'd also like to point out that I do not like this segment. I would like to veto it if possible, but since this is a committee of 2, my vote doesn't count. And the reason is because I hold deep-seated hatreds. It's it's based on nothing for the most part. If I find a game that's out there that looks really stupid, and either I've played it or I haven't played it, it could be an instance where I've played the game for all of, you know, 10 minutes and I rendered my judgment right then and there. This game blows. I'm done with it. It's out of my life. Or it could just be a game that I see everyone else likes and I go, I hate that everyone else likes it, so I'm done with this. I don't even want to play the game because everybody likes it. And I know that's wrong to do, but I do it to people too. So I enjoy rendering verdicts on things that I cannot claim to be an expert on. Having said that, I played Metal Gear Solid 3. I think that was the one I played.
You played 4.
Oh, I played Metal Gear. See, and it's so forgettable to me because I hated it. I just did not enjoy a single fucking thing about that game. And it made me say, I never want to play another Metal Gear Solid game ever. I certainly don't revisit the original Metal Gear for Nintendo back in 1987. I think that was released. And I found that game to be utterly difficult I don't think anyone I know ever beat that game. Because the dogs, do you remember there were dogs that would like come out in the screen and they would bite you and you die? Like with like 3 screens into the game. It was just stupid. I was done with it. So that's how I feel about the Metal Gear Solid series. I just don't care. My opinion has been informed by a series of mishaps that just I want to turn a shoulder to it. But because of this fucking segment now, I have to face it down. And I guess I'll be playing Metal Gear Solid 3. I'll delve into the past of Solid Snake's mentor or some bullshit about that. Watch some geezer try to knife people and silently sneak around shit. Watch extended cutscenes that will bore me to death. I mean, this whole thing is fucking dumb. Nobody's going to want
to
watch
it. You've got to judge it fairly, though. That's the key.
I will give it.
You've got to come to the table sensibly.
I'm just saying, look, I'll do that. I'm just saying it's going to get a forget. That's what's going to happen. I'm giving it. I'm calling it right now. It's going to get a forget. I'm not going to forgive it.
What's particularly interesting about Chris picking Metal Gear is it's probably... Well, it definitely is one of my favorite series of all times. And Metal Gear Solid 3 is one of my favorite games of all time. So we're going to have that extra bit of contention here as he plays that game. And I'll hopefully be tuning into the streams and, of course, be participating in the Hangout to provide some reasoned judgment as counterpoint to Chris's inevitable hatred.
There is no reasoned counterpoint. I am law.
And I will be playing... I think I'm going to start with Sonic. So Sonic's a series. I never had a Genesis. Very few people I knew were Sega fans growing up. Everyone was Super Nintendo. And Sonic was just a franchise that I always saw as lesser than... And it is lesser than the Mario franchise. If you disagree with that, stop listening to the podcast. So it's a game that I think I played very briefly, found uninteresting, and have just forgotten for most of my gaming history. And I'm willing to come to the table and play. I'm trying to find out what is considered to be the best Sonic game. I think it's 2. So I'll probably start with that one. And I'm willing to give it a fair shake and evaluate it on its own merits. And I'm going to kick things off with our first Forgive or Forget live stream, which will be this upcoming Friday, December 6th, 7 p.m. Pacific time. Tune in. I'll be playing for about 2 hours. Come hang out and chat. We'll talk. We'll watch some Sonic. Looking forward to it.
What'll be interesting about this one is that I did play the Sonic franchise because I was a Sega Genesis kid. So I had Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, and I don't know if I ever went on if there was a Sonic 3, but I played those games. I have no beef with them. Not my favorite games in the world. Obviously, it is inferior to Mario, but I still have a special place in my heart for that game. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see whether or not either of us have a change of heart over a game that the other one is somewhat fond of, or in your case, you're a rampant fanboy for whatever fucking reason that would be.
So let's continue with Tito Mosquito's epic Gex fan fiction. You may want to tune into episodes 10 and 11 to get the full story. But to recap, what we left off with was Gex's mom fell upon a huge pot of money, decided to buy NASA and turn it into a themed restaurant, apparently.
She also bought Australia because the kids had always wanted to visit it.
Yeah, so she bought a country and a beloved space program, the number one space program in the world. And out of pure vengeance for her husband's death, turned it into Space Monkeys, a themed restaurant. Gex fell into a pot of that money as well and just decided to spend the rest of his life watching TV and eating. That's where we pick things up. And we only have a short conclusion here, but I mean, we're all anticipating something huge.
Well, especially because with the way things ended, it was a very stunning and compelling departure for Gex when he said goodbye to his mom. It was sort of a, well, see ya.
And yeah, Tito,
and then
Tito, for all his brilliance, doesn't quite understand pacing and character development.
No, because then the mom just went and fixed one of the monkey butlers that they have, and whatever, the servers at her new themed restaurant, the Space Monkeys restaurant, I think it was. And she just goes off to fix a monkey. Like, her son leaves, and she just kind of goes, all right, see you later. And then...
Yeah, they're all very emotionless and robotic. But meanwhile, the whole premise is built around this intense trauma from the death of the father. But then we look at these characters, and they all could give a shit about each other.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll create a whole separate podcast where we just close read to the Mosquito Spanish. And Tito, if you're out there, we want to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, here we go. In a few days, Gex was parked in front of his TV, munching from a nearby bowl of flies. He woke up this morning to do his usual routine of nude funkercise.
What is this? What is that? Is that made up or is that a real thing? Did he make that up?
And that is the N in nudes capitalized and the F in funkercise is capitalized. Then he fired up the Barca Lounger, which I believe they make that reference in the game itself. I guess it's like a Lazy Boy.
Okay, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, Barca Lounger. Right. Grabbed a quick bite to eat. He was already eating, Tito. And prepared to watch some serious tube. He was now in the middle of flipping through channels to see what was on. Nope, 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 he droned as he clicked the remote again and again, surfing through the reruns of Kung Fu Theater, a wacky cartoon, and an old Indiana Jones movie. Those shows were so boring. He'd already seen all of them at least a million times. Ugh, I'm ready for something different. Frustrated, Gex started clicking all the remote's buttons rapid fire, speeding through the channels in a super fast blur. While he was clicking and kicking back, a fly buzzed by. Gex flicked out his tongue and gulp! Down it went. But the fly tasted strange. Metal. Suddenly, Gex's remote jammed and the TV blanked. What's going on? This TV's brand new! Very far from here, yet so very close. I'm unsure what that means.
I don't know. That was a sentence on its own?
Yeah. So Gex says, what's going on? This TV is brand new. And then we get very far from here, yet so very close.
I don't know what he's referencing.
A large figure stands watching the dormant universe, pressing the controls in front of him. The controls view screen in front. All right. We're going to have to go slow here. The controls' view screen in front of the cybernetic raptor is blinking red. Okay, so we've got a cybernetic raptor standing in front of the dormant universe.
Okay.
Okay. There he is, a voice rasped. He grinned silently in anticipation as he is watching through Gex's TV. You are mine, laughing to himself. Out with the peacock. He pulled his cold claws back, swaying his dark cape and extend it through the view screen. In with the gecko.
What?
Tito, Listen, this was New Year's Eve. It's getting late.
The scene was set up like Vader on the bridge of a Super Star Destroyer staring out at, you know, the incomplete Death Star. Like, that's what I was imagining, is this Raptor character or whatever is sort of doing. Because he's sort of spying on Gex in a way, right? That's what we're seeing. And
yeah.
And then he's saying, out with the peacock. Does he...
Is that like NBC? Let's try to parse this out. Yeah, I'm thinking it's an NBC reference, okay. Right? That must have been a tagline, maybe? Or maybe like a CBS tagline.
Yeah. Which...
Because they're saying, out with the peacock, in with CBS or whatever.
Okay.
I'm assuming.
I don't know. Yeah, so out with the peacock, in with the gecko.
Yeah.
So this guy must...
That's what the Raptors
say. The Raptor is pro Gex. He likes Gex because he wants the gecko to be a successful corporation that puts on hit TV shows. I'm trying to figure out, does he want us to make this man evil or good? It sounds like he should be good based on the words, but his actions are evil. Sounding also at the same time.
I think he's evil. Like, what we're witnessing here, I think, is the prelude to Gex Enter the Gecko. To Gex number one. This has all been a prequel because the Raptor, a huge hand shot out of this TV screen, grabbed Gex by the neck, and zzzzt, just like that, Gex had been yanked into his TV. Gex screamed as he is falling through a wormhole into the unknown. And that is the end.
Oh, so that's what it was. This, in all of two sentences, we could have done without everything that had happened up until that point. Because
No, we had to know that Gex ate a bowl of flies, then grabbed another quick bite to eat, did nude Funker size, hilarious.
I'm talking about, did we need to know that Gex and his family moved to Encino, full of white racist skinheads, meet a guy named like Harv who wants people to do you see all of that? That was all leading up to this. That was all prelude to that moment where he gets
there were a lot of loose ends.
Oh my god.
Still, this nearly 2400 word document garnered 6 reviews, which we're going to read right now.
Nice.
4 favorites and 2 follows.
Holy shit.
Here's what the reviews say. Raging Bonaboo says, and this was December 21st, 2012. Oh man, I remember playing the first Gex on the PS1 when I was young. I totally can't wait to see more chapters of this fic! Smiley face. You're going to be waiting a while, Raging Banaboo. It's been 4 years.
Oh, my God.
Let's see. Flower Star says, I remember hating this game, but I can't remember why. It had a few good old memories, though. Maybe you ought to do that Scream TV chapter in time for Halloween, because it's coming around the corner. Along with this game, there were games in the collection. They are in my little sister's room nowadays. Except the first, original Spyro games, which I kept in my room. We're getting all of Flower Stars, which I kept in my room, such as Croc Legend of the Gobbos, Croc 2, Crash Bandicoot, Crash Bandicoot 2, Cortex Strikes Back, Crash Bandicoot 3.
You couldn't Warped. Just say the Crash Bandicoot series and be done with it. You have to listen.
Listen, we're dealing with
this
someone.
This is an itemized receipt. Clearly, yes, these people are... Get on with it.
She's not done, by the way.
Give me more.
A Spice Girls game. Ugh. A Barbie game.
Of course.
A Jackie Chan game.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Demo games, etc.
Now we get the
etc. But that's all I can remember. Probably the good old memories from this game was playing through this Chinese-themed level, but that's all I remember. I don't think this had a sequel. Does it? I'm sure the first chapter is based on the Into... of the game. I'm not sure if my sis still has it. She's not done, Chris! Oh. Thank you so much for adding Spyro and Jake Long, Ripto's Revenge, in your favorite stories list. Oh my god. I think we might be reading some Flower Star fan fiction.
Is she done?
Yes.
Okay.
after listing all the games that are in her little sister's room.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so Flower Star. Here's Flower Star's favorite games. We're going to dig deep here. Super Mario 64, Powerpuff Girls, Mario Kart, Paper Mario, Dancing Stage Mario Mix, Mario Party, a lot of them, Super Princess Peach, Kirby, basically every Mario game and every Spyro game. Here's what she dislikes.
Oh, we get to know that too. Go on.
Pokemon.
Hey, all right. I like her. I like
surprising. This. Sonic.
Whoa.
She's going to tune in.
Give us a Metal Gear Solid and she's hooked.
Here's where shit gets real.
Uh-oh.
Flower Star, huge fan of Spyro, Spyro 2, and Spyro 3. Fucking hates The Legend of Spyro Trilogy and Spyro's Adventure. Fuck that shit!
Oh, God. Are there more comments? Can we be done with this? I'm sorry.
You have no idea. This is fucking incredible. Oh my god. Her profile, I've never seen a profile this long. I'm just scrolling through it. She lists everything about herself.
When was her last login date? Can you see?
Let's see. Her profile was updated November 18th. She joined February 13th, 2005. I think she's still going strong.
Oh my god. We need to get her on the show too. I'm utterly fascinated by these people.
I know. These like little sub communities of the internet that exist.
And they just operate on the periphery. Like they're okay not knowing about the cooler things going on the internet. They just like their little plot of land.
Yeah, they build. It's like those people who, you know, live in the middle of Indiana, have a small little house, have never traveled outside of like maybe a 2-3 state area,
right,
and are totally satisfied with life. Like that, this is the internet version of that.
And they're living the life. They're living a life I envy, sadly.
Yeah. She's got favorite songs.
Hit me with the top three.
She doesn't rank them, so I'll just give you their We Like to Party by the Venga Boys on the list. Let's see. I'm trying to see stuff I don't recognize a lot. Who's Cheryl Cole?
Cheryl Cole's, she was on like X Factor. She's one of the judges, I think, on X Factor, that British show.
She loves S Club 7. Sugar Babes.
I don't know who that is.
Jump by Madonna. That's Criss Cross or House of Pain or whatever.
It's also Van Halen.
Yeah, there are many better versions of a song called Jump by Madonna.
And by the way, I think she's from England because like S Club 7 is they're created by a former Spice Girls manager, Simon Fuller. Simon Fuller, of course, is one of the he's responsible for acts such as Carrie Underwood, Amy Winehouse, Mark Anthony, blah blah blah.
She has favorite couples from video games.
Huh.
Like of course, classic Mario and Princess Peach.
Mm-hmm.
But then Spyro and Allura.
I don't even know what Spyro is, I don't think.
It's like a little cartoon dragon. Anyway,
oh, I remember that. Okay.
We're gonna see if we can find some fan fiction from Flower Star and make her a celebrity on par with Tito Mosquito.
I don't think we have time for any more comments. I think we've gone over. I don't want to do this podcast anymore. Can we be done? Can I go?
Everyone is released. Your homework is to watch the live stream this Friday at 7 p.m. Pacific. What is that? 10 p.m.
10 p.m. Eastern.
If you're in Central or Mountain Time, you're a lost cause.
If you're in Arizona, that's two. What are we at? That would be 9 o'clock your time because you didn't do daylight savings time.
Get a calculator out. Figure it out. We're not doing it for you.
No.
And you should, if you're interested in the streams, just follow us on Twitch and you'll get an email when we go live.
You can also visit us at www.superdumbgames.com. Catch some content there. Follow us on Twitter at superdumbgames. I think that's our Twitter handle. I don't know. I don't really care. All right, I'm leaving. Chris, out.
some before you get late.
Games. Dumb games. Super dumb games.